now that I've gotten out of school and have been out of college for 13 or so years and my friends are starting to make more decisions and are higher up in the ranks, they finally get it, that what we do is pretty cool.
Welcome to Speaking Insurance, a weekly podcast where we talk with successful insurance and risk management professionals to gain some insight into their success and to talk about the topics that are relevant to you. This is Speaking Insurance. Today's guest is Spencer McClinahan. Spencer joined Roach Howard Smith & Barton, an independent insurance broker in Dallas, in 2010. He's now a vice president on the sales team. In this podcast, he talks about his path into insurance sales, how he overcame his initial fears, and his advice for how to have a successful, fulfilling career in insurance sales. So first of all, Spencer, go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us where you went to school and how you got into insurance.
I grew up in Arlington, went to Arlington High School, graduated high school in 99, went to Baylor. At the time, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I thought business school, sure. Baylor had a good business school. One of the things that's different about school down there is they allow you in the business school to declare multiple majors. So I had my marketing major declared, and I realized after about 3.5 years that I was going to get out of school in 4 years, and I didn't know what to do. So I declared a second major, that being insurance. When I was down there, I had a couple of pretty influential and interesting professors in the insurance program. One of them was a producer already in Waco, a guy by the name of Wes Bailey, who a lot of CIC people know. So getting out of school, I now had at least a little bit of a path going. So I started interviewing with some insurance companies. Now, my dad is also in the insurance business, but he has a very unique niche. All he does is jeweler's block. It's a great niche. He's carved out a brilliant little nook for himself, but it wasn't what I really wanted to do. I kind of wanted to do my own thing. So I interviewed with some insurance companies. I did the round robin thing with Chubb. Didn't really want to move around was the one problem. So interviewed with a couple agencies, took a job and a position with Sleeper Sewell and started with those guys in January of 2004.
So you knew about insurance as a career before you went into college?
I had a little bit of a exposure to it with my dad, but I always thought of him more. He does, like I said, jeweler's block. So I always thought of him as more of a jewelry guy because he would go to jewelry shows and he would do these jewelry conventions. He still doesn't consider himself an insurance guy. He almost shuns away from it. It's kind of funny. But I did have a little bit of, just by osmosis, understanding what the basics of the business were. And then I really got to see it firsthand in college. So Wes took us to his accounts, which was unique in class, to leave class one day and then walk through a manufacturing facility and learn what do we actually do during our day-to-day job in our profession when you're looking at a manufacturing risk, how does this work? So that was kind of the best exposure that related to what I was going to end up doing eventually.
So you went straight from college into a producer role.
I did.
How was that?
It was unique. It was really kind of a unique time in the insurance business. If any producer were to go back and that's been doing this for 20 plus years and say, what was it like between 03 and 08? There was a transitional time. It was after 9/11, before the financial crisis. There was a lot of evolution going on technologically. I remember my first year or so still faxing things, and I didn't have a BlackBerry yet. They were out, but not really very prevalent. So it was a lot of manual entry and a lot of kind of, I wouldn't say that old school where you're writing applications on a napkin, but it was not nearly what it was today. It was hard. I didn't have a real network. I wasn't from Dallas. I was from Arlington, which doesn't seem like that big of a gap. But when we grew up, Dallas was forever away. We'd come out here to go to Coca-Cola Starplex to see Dave Matthews maybe. But besides that, we didn't know anything about the city, so I didn't have any real connections. What really made the difference for me was at the time having a super strong and engaged mentor, a guy by the name of John Stoker, who a lot of people in the business still know. He retired in his early 50s after the agency Sleeper Sewell sold to a bank. And he made a big difference because he got me focused on how to go after business. And if I needed something from him, if I walked into his office, he hands off the keyboard, turned his chair to his desk and said, what can I do for you? So it made a big difference.
So were you scared coming right out of college and going straight into a sales role?
A little bit. I do distinctively remember my first day. It was January of 2004, and I didn't know where to live in Dallas. So I just picked a an apartment complex literally behind the office where the agency was based. And I walked in one morning and I was sitting in the office getting ready to start my first day in one of the senior producer office, and the sun was coming up and it was coming through the blinds, and I remember thinking, I don't know what I'm doing here. I mean, I had no clue. It was scary. So I've yet to meet a producer who, if you ask them if they make it, let's say a producer 5 years in, 10 years in, they've been successful. I've yet to meet one that I can ask the question, how many times did you think about quitting, and them not tell me an answer. It wasn't, oh, I never thought about quitting. It was, oh, at least 4 times.
So coming into a sales role, being nervous, obviously you don't win every deal.
Sure.
And there's a lot of adversity, especially I'm sure in the first few years. How do you overcome that adversity? How do you keep that persistence and keep going out there?
Another thing that really helped me out, I got lucky buddying up and being friends with a few specific insurance companies and underwriters. And it was arranged. There were a couple underwriters I had that went to Baylor that I knew that, you know, we had the contemporary thing going and we'd really roll up our sleeves and they would help me try and get deals. And then I had one or two in particular that were guys in their 50s and 60s that just took a liking to me. I was told really early on by my dad and other people that I knew, you know, really being honest and straightforward with the underwriters is important because you can only burn that bridge one time, and it's a small industry. Everybody knows everybody. So trying to gain that trust was kind of important. I think it's becoming more and more realized, and this isn't a groundbreaking comment, but the real key to make it this day and age especially is to come up with a niche, a specialty. If somebody asks me what I do within the industry, I can tell them in a very, very few short words what it is that I do, because there's not much business I go after. It's a very narrow field, and you have to specialize.
So what about, though, internally? I mean, I know you had external forces that helped you, but what about the internal battle? What went on in your mind that helped you?
Some of that stuff I could say is just some people have thicker skin than others, maybe more resilient. I'm not saying I have the thickest skin or are the most resilient, but you know, just don't get too down about it. You know, my personality the way it is, and I know salespeople that the highs are really high and the lows are really low, and that's okay. It doesn't take a certain specific personality type to make it work in this job. For me, my highs and lows aren't that big of a swing. I get excited about a new account, but it's not the biggest deal in the world to me. It doesn't, you know, in the grand scheme, I don't let it get that out of control. And same thing when the negative happens, because you're going to lose accounts and you're not going to get accounts. As long as you keep in perspective and keep pushing forward, you just see by obviously looking up, I mean, we're as tall as the shoulders of the giants we stand on. And by looking around and knowing that at my firm now, at Roach, Howard, Smith and Barton, I'm surrounded by a lot of guys that have been doing this for a lot longer than me. And I see them lose accounts based on whatever. They don't get it because it's a new deal that goes to the CFO's buddy, or they lose an account they've had a long time because of acquisition or whatever the reason is. And they always keep plugging along. And when it happens to me, I know I have to keep plugging along. It's just the nature of it. So I think the quicker you realize it's the nature of the business, it's just part of it, it becomes pretty day-to-day. It's just part of the gig.
What skills have you found are needed to really be successful in sales?
You know, it's funny. There's the old mantra of like the sales guy's got to be the, and that's the thing, sales guy. Like I think more effectively, our firm has multiple producers that are women, and I think they're the most effective in our firm as far as like peer production. We've got really good effective men too. I'm not saying women are better than men or vice versa. But the old mentality was sales guys are the backslappers and the talkative ones and the persistent ones and all this kind of stuff. There are some inherent traits that probably need to be there. And I think the biggest thing that's going to draw people into it now is going to be the flexibility of being a producer. I don't have hours. I've never in my life had vacation days or lunch hours or whatever. You know, my wife's a nurse practitioner and she's got days off and days on, and I've never had to deal with that, which is really nice. It's pretty awesome to think, well, yeah, I don't have any hours. I don't have any. So the flexibility, I think, will be a draw. Now, that doesn't answer the question about the traits, but I think people can adjust and be a fit for the role if they like the end gain with that. Now, the biggest trait is going to, well, biggest, I guess, I should say, persistence is a real big one. Self-starter I mean, these are all pretty simple and basic. You just, because you don't have hours, and I mean, it doesn't matter if I go to work tomorrow. I don't have to show up and nobody would think anything of it if I just stay on my couch, but that's not going to do good for me in the long run. So being able to just run your own business, be a self-starter, which is hard sometimes. I mean, I definitely get caught Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock thinking, do I really want to make this next couple of, you know, appointment sets? You know, I can just go and hang out on the couch and drink a beer or something. So there's the balance. But, you know, self-starter, persistence, it's a sales job, yeah, and you have to be a good salesperson, but I don't think that it's as salesy as it used to be. I mean, it's gotten so technical. You have to be pretty smart and know some stuff to make it long-term. You can get teed up if your uncle's a banker that knows a lot of people. I mean, that person can introduce you and you can maybe get some business that way, but that's not sustainable. So you got to be pretty smart and carve something out.
So that brings us to education. So how has education played a role in your professional career?
Well, I mean, having an insurance degree was a big step forward. Coming out with a basic understanding of insurance was helpful. The technical piece of it is hard to grasp right all at once, and I still learn every day. I mean, education's important, continuing education's important because our products are always evolving. It's easy to get caught up in the, I've been doing it this way for, and I know the insurance business, I've been doing this for 50 years type thing. So obviously continuing education is important, but there's a balance. I've known people that have 8 designations behind their name, and that's all they've done is just go get designation, and they're not set up to be producers, and that's fine, but they couldn't be producers. You know, they're really, they're focused, and that's, we need both kinds, both types. So there's a balance between how much time do I spend on education, continuing education, and how much time do I need to actually be producing. So
you got your CIC designation while you were fairly young, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I kind of hit the ground running with it. I was referred to the program out of college. A lot of my colleagues at my first job had the designation and said, look, if you're going to be in sales, this is a really good pathway to learn the business from a practical standpoint. I did 4 classes the first year and then finished the 5th January of 2005. So I was already in the mode of test taking, studying. So it was just kind of, let's just keep the train rolling and went with it from there. So I got it right. And by the time I finished, I felt a lot more comfortable with the basics. I mean, that's really the key, is how do you go from 0 to 60 with the basics and know at least what you're talking about when somebody says, you know, business interruption. What does that mean?
If I was a young person just starting out in insurance, what advice would you give to me?
Talk to as many people as you can. The insurance business has so many different positions and so many different levels. Whatever your personality or your needs are, they can most likely be met. If you want to be in a big city with a big firm and be a, you know, part of something huge, you know, I want to work for Aon in Manhattan, then great. You might want to, you know, I know guys that run these great little family offices in the middle of nowhere outside of Wichita Falls that sling oil and gas insurance, and that's perfect for them. So there's such a wide spectrum. So meet as many people as you can and don't rush into that first job. I mean, if you get only one offer, then take it. But, you know, there's a lot out there. Try and figure out maybe where you think you would fit best within the business. It's very seldom you see somebody that has a start-to-finish career in insurance with the same company. It's almost unheard of. But back to the younger people, to answer your question, try and figure out macro what you want as far as location and what you think you'd like to do day-to-day, and then narrow it down. I want to stay close to home and work for a medium-sized insurance company as an underwriter. Great. So you want to stay in Dallas and talk to Hanover, and you want to talk to Travelers and Chubb, and after that, go from there. I want to move around a lot and see the country. Great, go talk to Zurich AIG or Chubb. I mean, there's a fit for everybody, you know, and it's, as long as you have an idea, and maybe you don't have an idea, and just give it a shot, and in that first job, maybe they'll train you and you'll see an opportunity elsewhere and you take that, so.
So we talked some about what does it take to be an insurance producer, and you mentioned some of the, you know, perhaps some of the stereotypes of what a producer is. Have you found that there are any perhaps any negative stereotypes out there, any misunderstandings that people have about what an insurance producer is, and how might they be different than what the reality is?
Yeah, no, good question. I mean, a little bit. I think that with insurance in general, there's a gap of misunderstanding. I think that for the most part, my friends that all have their graduate degrees that work in finance joke about, I had no idea that what you do is what it is. You know, so these guys that are highly educated, that have gone through, you know, big grad programs, worked for big banks and big whatever, and it took them to meet me and see what I do to have any idea. So I think there's not a lot of exposure to the industry in general. If you were to go poll and start pulling people to the side who are here and ask them, was your mom or dad in insurance? You're going to get a lot of yeses, and the exposure is that way, which is fine. I mean, if it just keeps getting passed down generation to generation, that's great. But I think for the most part, you could say the used car salesman, the door-to-door auto salesman, but, you know, nothing too much outside of that. The real issue is just the ignorance in people not knowing what it is that we actually do. That's the biggest thing. And, you know, now that I've gotten out of school and I've been out of college for 13 or so years and my friends are starting to make more decisions and are higher up in the ranks, they finally get it, that what we do is pretty cool and, you know, interesting, but, you know, they just weren't ever exposed to it, so people just don't have a real idea or understanding what we do.
For more resources and information on how to make the most out of your insurance career, including educational and networking opportunities, visit thenationalalliance.com. You can also visit us on LinkedIn to comment on this podcast and suggest topics for future podcasts. This is Speaking Insurance.